Welcome to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. I'm John Cook, and I'm joined by George Goncalves, MUFG's head of U.S. macro strategy. It's Tuesday, September 21st, 2021. Welcome back to the podcast, George.
Happy to be back, John.
Always good to have you. So the bond market has been in what feels like one of the longest sideways trading ranges that at least I can remember, and especially notable in the face of super high inflation and as of late volatility and weakness in the stock market as investors try to figure out how much damage unwinding and, you know, and or perhaps many overleveraged Chinese property developers causes. So despite all this, the long end of the curve, long end of the treasury curve, call it 10 years and out, has largely been stuck. So let me get into the question. We're coming up on some key events like the Fed, and we can touch on that later in the podcast. But as the trading days left in the year kind of quickly dwindle, I guess the question is, will rates ever move again? I mean, will Treasury sell off as so many thought they would earlier in the year? Or are we in a bizarre world where the market itself is executing yield curve control, you know, rather than the central bank?
Yeah, no, this has been our struggle now. I think it's going on almost 2 months, really, since the summer when we got to the lows and rates and been trying to make a move higher. I think it's good to take a step back and try to, you know, parameterize what we've been going through and then look at the charts. I mean, I think the charts actually at this point actually do give us some good guidance. If you kind of zoom out, even though it's felt like a long trading range, yeah, it's, you know, we've seen moments like this before, so it's not completely unusual. However, when they linger for as long as we've been in this type sort of range, when we do see a move, the next move usually is pretty sharp and quick. It's not this kind of continuation of just grinding away. Whatever happens next will be a pretty sharp break in one direction or the other. So that's why it's, you know, super critical to try to understand, like, what would be the catalyst that would take us out of this range and try to understand it. If you kind of like go back and look at the 2016 example, when you had an equally large or even larger sell-off in rates around the 2016 election and the hopes of reflation back then, you saw a pretty big sell-off in rates, consolidated for a while, and then a rally that basically lasted a full year, but it was never really a tight range and it went down lower. But in that environment back in 2016 and 2017, you know, the key large kind of technical moving averages like the 50-day, the 100-day, the 200-day really didn't cross each other until about 6 or 9 months after the initial big impulse higher in rates. Whereas if you look at what's happening now, given the big sell-off that we had earlier in the year around Q1 and early Q2, the fact that it didn't stay up there long enough has resulted in, you know, at least now, the first one was the 50-day moving average coming back down and crossing actually the 200-day moving average. And if you look at the 100-day moving average, it's now converging with the 200-day moving average, which is still in an uptrend. So this is really super critical. I mean, these things kind of project into early October. And, you know, there's a number of things that we have to get through from now until then that could dictate where we go in rates. And the big ones are what's happening overseas in China and how markets get a grasp of what's going on there. Is it really the start of something bigger? Will it lead to further risk off in financial assets, and which typically should be net positive for fixed income products like the long end of the curve, and that would then negate this channel that we're in and probably see a sharper break lower in rates. But we also have the debt ceiling and the political wranglings down in DC, and when will they get these fiscal plans in place? And then we have the Fed, right? So, and plus, of course, there's always these are the known unknowns or the known knowns that will drive price action, but there's always things that we're not foreseeing, which could always come and impact markets. While we're kind of going through that, we're also still in a period where it's not clear that the data is going to turn for the better, considering that there's still some unevenness that's being impacted because of the Delta variant and disruptions in the supply chain. So there's still not enough kind of clear momentum to turn around the deceleration that we've had on the economic side. So like, we're not going to get a macro call. If anything is going to change this direction, it's going to be some sort of exogenous event or new information out of Washington. And I think that's what makes it so tricky and is what's led to, you know, not, I wouldn't say complacency. I think there's more complacency in like risk assets and in credit, in the pure rates macro markets and in FX as well. I think there's this indecision and really just confusion amongst macro investors because there's no real clear direction here. And there's a lot of big key events ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that you could almost call that an understatement between the, you know, the Fed, the debt ceiling, throw the BOJ in there, you know, maybe a slowdown in spending, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So we're recording this podcast on Tuesday, September 21st. That is, as our listeners know, one day ahead of the September FOMC meeting. You just put out your Fed preview. Why don't you quickly take our listeners through what to expect from tomorrow's Fed, or I guess this, you know, today's Fed, depending on when you're listening to this thing. And what are the risks, you know, both from a dovish and a hawkish perspective?
Sure. Let's go through the baseline and really focus on the three key things. This is a quarterly FOMC meeting, so they're going to provide new economic projections as well as the infamous interest rate dots, the median forecast for interest rates that, you know, Fed policymakers contribute into. And in this specific meeting in September, and that's when they launch the new upcoming next terminal rate, which will be the 2024 dots. So we're going to get a glimpse into their thinking about, you know, where rates will be in 2024, an additional year forward. And as you remember, in at the June meeting, and what really has created some volatility in the rates market around Fed meetings was at the June meeting, they collectively, again, not in coordination, but collectively the median dots came out to projecting two hikes in 2023. And that's really what got the markets, you know, really focused on, you know, the Fed's in play, potentially, you know, going to, you know, move quicker towards a tightening campaign. So if we get any sort of guidance on what their intentions are for 2024, is it going to be kind of a methodical rate rising campaign similar to 2023, where they project two hikes or more, which will be very hawkish? Or, you know, do they kind of, you know, not have enough, you know, visibility or clarity to make a strong call on where rates should be, and therefore most of the forecasters take a more conservative approach, a dovish approach, and we only see like one hike projected for 2024. So the dot plot this time, it always matters, even though if Fed Chair Powell says we shouldn't look at them, you know, markets are obsessed with the dots and they will look at them. And, you know, it does give at least some perspective, and the overall short-term interest rate markets do key off that information, or at least try to get some sort of validation of where pricing is, to see if they're that far away from the Fed. And then, you know, the other two things, which I'll say towards the end, but the other thing is the statement. You know, the Fed's mantra has been all along that inflation is transitory. I mean, how much longer does it have to remain high before it becomes more persistent? And how do they characterize the, you know, the whole inflation as transitory thing is going to be important. Meanwhile, the economy has started to decelerate a little bit, and we had a weaker NFP than expected coming out of the August number. But yet, you know, Fed speakers of late sound as if they've achieved substantial further progress, and they're really, you know, itching to go with the tapering. And then all of that will kind of culminate with you know, Chair Powell's press conference, where, you know, he'll probably, you know, he'll most likely go through all of these changes and their policy update, as well as probably take questions on China and the debt ceiling, and will that impact, you know, Fed thinking. My base case is that we're not going to get the full tapering announcement in September, but, you know, as I've said before publicly, this, you know, every meeting is live. You know, we only have three more meetings for the end of the year, and their, you know, their intention is to start tapering. So, you know, there is a risk that September could be when they give enough information that even if it's not the full details, the market will react as if, wow, the Fed is really tapering and it's going to start, you know, in the coming weeks. And that's where we get the tapering announcement, where the tapering effect actually starts to matter for markets. They could, of course, obviously give us the full breakdown and the process and procedures where you would get a separate link from the New York Fed. That would be like the most uber hawkish event that I can think of. But the more likely base case is that they give us the details. There's a risk that the 2022 dot could also tip over towards one median hike. And if the 2024 dots actually come in with two hikes, that plus taper discussions would be pretty hawkish as well. And so I'm kind of leaning more on the hawkish side that, you know, this is their time now to put in place their plans for both tapering as well as make these dot adjustments, which they can always change later on if they have to. But, you know, this is where we're at, and probably waiting or delaying, you know, although they get the benefit of more information on the economic side as well as what's going on globally, then it kind of brings them back to this world of always dragging things out versus just, you know, moving on, where, you know, they can clearly make the case if they were to taper or get the tapering pieces in place, they can make the case that, look, tapering is not necessarily tightening. We're still going to be buying, you know, 105 or whatever billion per month when they start the reduction, which we think is going to be about 15 billion per month. They're still doing easing, just at a much slower pace, and they can then start, you know, changing the conversation away from focus just on tapering, but more towards getting, you know, the economy to an even stronger place, so that eventually they can tighten. Either our base case is still early 2023, but if things were to improve in 22, they could always pull it forward if they were to finish early.
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, you've made the point before, you know, how there's, you know, over $1 trillion sloshing around in you know, the Fed's reverse repo facility, and how the Fed maybe actually should have done this before. So seems like a lot of reasons for them to do it, but certainly a lot of risks associated with it. So to our listeners, I would encourage you to check out George's September FOMC preview and market implications publication. And if you're not getting it, reach out to George directly, myself directly, or your MUFG sales rep. And George, great having you on the podcast. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me, John.
Thank you for listening to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And reach out to your MUFG sales rep for any further information. Check back soon for more insights from the Global Markets Research Team.